Welcome to WRHU's One-on-One Stories. For the next 30 minutes, our host, Dr. Gregory Barroza, will talk with influential and inspirational guests. One-on-One Stories explores all areas of life and lifestyles affected by health, fitness, nutrition, medicine, mental attitude, and general well-being. Our guests discussed unique aspects of their lives and work, including current, controversial, and offbeat subjects of interest to all of us. It's One-on-One Stories with Dr. Gregory Barroza.
Our guest today is SiriusXM co-host and boxing aficionado and author, Randy "The Commish" Gordon.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ear. I got a bad case of loving you.
Randy Gordon spent 40 years in the world of professional boxing. No one else has ever seen the sport from so many different angles and from such lofty seats. From his days as a wheelchair-bound, severely injured boy in 1959 to his professional career as a fighter, writer, reporter, referee, editor-in-chief of the internationally prestigious Ring magazine, New York State boxing commissioner, and now, along with former heavyweight boxing championship contender Jerry Cooney, he is co-host of SiriusXM's At the Fights. I must add personally that in his book, The Glove Affair, Randy lays out a riveting story of an honorable life, well lived. In certain circles, many would consider Randy to be a true mensch. Randy, it's my distinct honor and privilege to welcome you to my show, One-on-One Stories.
Doc, it is a pleasure being here. I'm really honored about this.
Well, I'm honored to have you, and I can sense the enjoyment you have in being who you are and all the life's journey that you took to get to this point, and that's the thrill of it. Today, we will broadcast part two of a two-part series discussing the events within Randy's book and his life.
But again, it's not the size of the dog in the fight. He was a lot bigger than me. It's the other way around.
I have to take 1 minute to just get back to you because you stimulated some thought in me. And one is that a few years ago, I was at Belmont Park for one of the big Triple Crown races, mm-hmm. and I'm standing with a fellow with decorations all over. He was a military guy all over his chest, mm-hmm. and he knew I was a veterinarian, and we were standing in front of the Secretariat statue, and he turned to me and he said, "You're a veterinarian. You know the story on Secretariat, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "As a kid, I worked on him." He said, "Really?" He says, "Well, they say that he was the greatest racehorse of all time because of the size of his heart. Is that true?" And I said, "Sir, it's yes and no." And he looked at me. And I said, "It's true. On postmortem, they found out after the fact he had one of the largest hearts, but we don't postmortem every horse." And I said, "As you know, it's not the size of the dog in the fight."
Mm-hmm.
From then on, we instantly bonded. I got invited up. That turned out to be the superintendent of West Point. Was invited up to his private home and office with my kids.
Wow.
And the whole bit. So it's kind of like what you were saying. Mm-hmm. Things happen for a reason. And I really believe in what you just said. It's the size of, it's the power of your heart, not necessarily the size of
it. Size, right? It's what's inside of you, what fires you, what drives you. If you got the drive to be a great student, you can be a great student. If you got the drive to be a great whatever it is, you can be a great whatever it is if you want to be. It's just, you don't just walk. There are some people, and I really admire this, and this is one of those gifts. You ever see somebody who could walk over to a piano? They never have sat at a piano before. They put their hands on it, and for whatever reason, music starts coming out. It's a gift. I call it a bolt. You're either hit with that bolt or you're not. You know, why can some baseball players hit 350 and make it look easy and other guys struggle to get to 250? Why can some guys smack 50 home runs in a year when other guys their size can't hit half the amount? The bolt. You know, why could certain golfers always be better than others? Look, I could spend my life on the golf course. I get my golf and bowling scores mixed up. I bowl about a 60 and I golf a 300. If I could switch them, I'd be great at both.
I'm going to challenge you here with your version. In horse racing, there was probably one of the greatest matchups, and that was affirmed in Aladar racing for first and second. And the second one that I can think of that I think is even greater was Secretariat and Sham. And it took two athletes with determination to win and a never-say-quit attitude. And I also now compare that to your world that you know the most about, boxing, and that would be Ali and Frazier. Why don't you tell us about that big fight they had where the 14th round spelled everything?
Two of the names, and I think most of the listeners know these two names because they are forever linked. They certainly know one of them, Muhammad Ali. Maybe the most recognizable face that's ever been photographed. I mean, I don't care who it is, even our current president, because everybody knows who American presidents are, because they're photographed every single day. But there was something about Muhammad Ali. In third world countries, they knew who Muhammad Ali was. And he is forever linked with his arch enemy, Joe Frazier. They fought three times. The once was in March of 1971. How big was the fight? It was so big at Madison Square Garden that during that time, the Vietnam War was raging. The war actually stopped. A ceasefire was called for a few hours right before the fight, during the fight, and right after, because it was just such a mind-blowing event. Joe Frazier knocked Ali down in the 15th round of the fight, won a decision. They fought again a couple of years later, and it was a 12-round decision for Ali. It really wasn't much of a fight because Ali fought a different fight, kept moving, jabbing, grabbing, holding on. And now it's even at one bout apiece. A few years later, now they're both past their prime. Who would have figured that the two of them were about to step into the ring in the Philippines, in Manila, in what we call the Thrilla in Manila? It was perhaps the most savage championship fight of all time, any division. The heat in the ring was around 125, 130 degrees. Most guys couldn't just jog around the ring for 3 minutes. And they gave 14 rounds, 3 minutes apiece. How they were able to even stand up in that heat and then do to each other, it was everything about boxing that scares me. It was absolute savagery. And this is one of those, the heart of both guys made them fight on and on. They were absolute warriors that night. And at the end of the 14th round, both guys were battered. Both guys were hurting. Joe Frazier's lips were basically shredded. He was swallowing his own blood when his corner man, Eddie Futch, looked at him, would not let him out for the final 3 minutes of the fight. He said, "That's it, son." And Joe knew there was no arguing with Eddie Futch, that Eddie was not going to give in. And Joe sat there and resigned himself to the fact that Ali had just beat him. What did Ali do? He then fell to the floor where it looked like he might have been praying. During my years as commissioner, I sat many times one-on-one with Muhammad Ali, and we spoke about all different issues from religion and politics and women and you name it. Two buddies talking life. And I asked him, "Muhammad, I've long heard you say that if Joe Frazier stood up to come out for that last round, round 15, you were not coming out. Were you saying that just to be nice to Joe?" He looked at me and shook his head. "No." He said, "Do you remember exactly what I did at the end of the 14th round?" I said, "When round 15 was about to start, I think you fell to your knees and you prayed." He shook his head. He said, yeah, I fell to my knees, but I wasn't praying. I collapsed. I told Angelo Dundee, his corner man, Angie, cut the gloves off. I can't go on. And I said, you really wanted Angelo to cut your gloves off? He said, I couldn't stand up. I was going to take no more punches from that beast, Joe Frazier. I had enough. I was going to quit. I was absolutely, that's what they gave to each other. But they continued, the animosity stayed. And one of the proudest things I ever did was shortly before the end of both of their lives, I got them back together again. And at Madison Square Garden at a Knicks game, they were sitting there in front of 20,000 people, and the PA announcer said, ladies and gentlemen, it was back in 1971. Perhaps the greatest sporting event of all time took place right here in the Garden. It was for the heavyweight championship of the world between Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. Ladies and gentlemen, sitting behind the Knicks bench are Joe Frazier and Muhammad. The crowd went crazy. Joe stood up. Ali had Parkinson's, was having real trouble walking, moving, talking. Joe helped him out of his seat. Together, they raised their hands to the ceiling of the Garden, and 20,000 people gave them a standing ovation. I was standing right near them with tears streaming down my face. Ali and Frazier, there will never be two more guys like that again.
Fantastic. Fantastic story. Thanks for sharing that. Again,
it means a lot. It really does mean a lot. Ali meant a lot to me. Frazier meant a lot to me. And when I saw how they treated people, everybody out there, I think, has met a star at one point, whether a Hollywood star, a singer, performer, actor, athlete, whatever it might be. And many times you don't want to meet them because they are not nice. In most cases, what you see on screen, what you revere and idolize on screen or where it, whatever it might be, they are not the kind of person you think they are or that you want them to be. They don't want to be bothered. They don't want to talk to you. They don't care that you wear their jerseys. They don't care that your kids wear their jerseys or your grandkids wear their jerseys. They don't care a thing about you. They entertained you, and that's all they care about. I have seen Ali and Frazier walk into crowds. Everybody knows or knew who they were. Neither one of them would stop signing autographs or taking pictures until everybody had their fill, or maybe the security said, okay, we got to go, and pulled them away. Again, there never was anybody like Ali and Frazier. There never, ever, 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 .. will be.
Unbelievable. Again, relating to something that I know a little bit more about in horse racing, mm-hmm. when we have a year with two superstars, in the old days, whatever that means anymore, we used to set up a match race. Everyone had to see the match race.
Sure.
We stopped doing that, though.
Now, why was that? I do know that you stopped.
Because they would race so hard that predictably, I don't know what the odds are, but predictably one of the horses would break down. They wouldn't give up. In boxing, you only have two people out there, and eventually you get that almost perfect match, like mm-hmm. Ali and Frazier at the same times in their life, the same exact talent, skills, and heart. And no one's going to quit until one dies. And in your book, you do state that Ali said in the 13th round, he felt like he was in hell and he felt like he was going to die. And he wasn't going to give up.
He told me he had been hit in other fights. Kenny Norton busted his jaw in 1973 in the first round. He fought 11 more rounds with a broken jaw. I can't even imagine what that could have felt like every time a punch landed on the jaw. It's like like putting your finger into an electric light socket. I mean, the shock that he had to feel every time he got hit. But these were special athletes, and I guess when that warrior is inside of you, you will fight until there's just no more fight left. You will reach down inside of yourself into places you never knew you had places and pull out your best effort. Whether it's win or lose, you're giving it everything you have. The expression we use in boxing is going out on your shield. Very few athletes in any sport are capable of reaching way down. And the expression is pulling victory from the jaws of defeat. Few guys can do that. Few men and women can do that. Ollie and Frazier had it in them. They were born warriors.
I'm going to thank you for being so gracious. Before this interview and our discussion about your book, I shared with you something, a real-life experience, and of course you never said to me that you already knew all this, but when I was at the University of Florida in Gainesville, my next-door neighbor was a guy named Jimmy Dundee. Angelo was his father, and I did get to meet Angelo for a few minutes, and that was prior to the fight with Foreman. And Jimmy shared with me, he said, you know, I said, is he afraid of this guy Foreman who was knocking everyone out left and right and was a killer and bigger and stronger? And he said, well, I'll tell you, the one and only boxer that really intimidates Ollie. And I said, who's that? And he said, Joe Frazier. And I said, but he's not as big or strong or tough. Or he says, it doesn't matter. He said, whatever Ollie hits him with, he keeps coming back for more and stronger. He said he just can't stop the guy. So in some sense, this is what you're talking about, that perfect match race where Frazier is not going to quit. And it took his trainer to pull him off because he knew that his own student or his own boxer might end up getting really hurt. And also, based upon your report in the book, Ali asked Dundee to take his gloves off. And
cut the gloves off.
And Dundee didn't do it. Who would have known what the world would have thought had he cut him off?
Well, Angelo was about to cut the gloves off when he happened to look over his shoulder. He just wanted to see what was going on. So when he looked over his shoulder, he saw Eddie Futch waving his hands at Joe, the back and forth, shaking his head. And he realized Eddie Futch was stopping the fight. Eddie was the trainer of Joe Frazier. And when he saw Eddie stopping the fight, he told Ali, it's over. Joe's not coming out. Had he not looked over his shoulder and just stood in front of Muhammad and said, you want me to cut the gloves off? Had he not looked over his shoulder, he was going to cut the gloves off. Ali would have lost the fight. Nothing would have changed in the course of history with either guy. It just would have meant Frazier would have had his second win over Ali. As it turned out, Ali had his second win over Frazier in what I said before was the most savage boxing match in history.
Can you share with us just a few minutes of, you had a chance to honor Ali at the Hotel Pierre in New York City in 1992. Sounds like that was one of the most influential experiences in your life. What was that about?
It was the proudest moment of my life. And I've had a lot of proud moments. When I say proud, everything from marrying my high school girlfriend and today we're still together. She is my best friend. 5 kids later, 12 grandkids later and everything. Those are proud moments. But the proudest moment of my business life came, as you said, in 1992 at the Hotel Pierre when Muhammad Ali was given a humanitarian award. And there were about 1,000 people in the audience. And as commissioner in New York, I was given the incredible honor. And again, you know, every time I think about this, I'm this fight fan. I'm a fight fan, a boxing fan, a sports fan. I thought it would be great if one day in my life I could sit ringside for a fight, never knowing I'm going to get to meet the greatest fighters of all time and become friends with them. They're going to call me at home on my cell. So I'm sitting there next to Ali on the dais. On my right was Muhammad Ali, then there's me, and on my left was the famed sports artist, Leroy Neiman. Now, if you don't know who he is and you look him up, you'll see a lot of his drawings. Oh, I know what, I recognize those drawings, colorful, swirly, N-E-I-M-E-N, Leroy Neiman. So he's sitting there sketching, and I'm thinking, man, he's probably doing one of his sketches of Muhammad Ali. I was half right. He was doing single sketches, one of Ali, one of me. He handed me mine. It still hangs very proudly in my den. Because if you ever went up to Leroy Neiman and said, would you, Leroy, can I commission you to do a sketch of me? He'd say, yeah, and $20,000 or whatever. He did a sketch of me and of Ali and said, please, I'd like you to have it. So we're sitting there as he sketched. Ali and I were whispering back and forth. And every time we'd lean towards each other, I'd see 1,000 people not looking at the guy who was at the podium, but staring at us. And a few politicians got up there. And of course, politicians are politicians. And they talk about what's best for them and about what's best for their party. And a few of the local New York politicians got up. One guy said, let me tell you something about Muhammad Ali. And Ali whispers to me, he taps me on the hand, pulls me over, and I lean over a little bit. And as I leaned over, he whispered, he doesn't even know my name. And I'm sitting there clamping my hand over my mouth so people can't see that I'm laughing. But they knew I was laughing. And Ali had this big grin on his face. And I said, Muhammad, everybody is staring at us. And he said, let them stare, because if they stare and they think about what we're talking about, they won't be listening to this nut job up at the podium. I didn't even realize I had nothing prepared. I didn't realize that when they were done, the MC would say, we'd like to hear now from New York State's Boxing Commissioner, Randy Gordon. And when he said that, I said to myself, oh, my God, I haven't thought of anything that I'm going to say to this big crowd and to Muhammad Ali. And then Ali said, go get him, champ. So I stood up. And many times we hear that the best speeches are right from the heart. Don't rehearse anything. Just let it go. So I got up there and I said, let me tell you a story about an 18-year-old kid on Long Island. I said, Muhammad, and many of the times I'd look at the audience and I'd look over at Muhammad. Muhammad, there was this 18-year-old high school senior in 1967. He was a big boxing fan. He was a big Muhammad Ali fan. And when you fail to step forward for military induction, Ring Magazine took you out of the ratings. They refused to do any articles on you except negative articles that you went against America. What you did was un-American, that you should be in jail. And the New York State Athletic Commission went even further. They pulled your license. You couldn't fight in New York. And because all the states show reciprocity, the other states said, well, he's banned in New York. He can't fight anywhere. So your boxing career was finished. You could go out and change tires if you wanted to. You could get a job in a department store. But you couldn't fight. You couldn't make the living that you were put here to do. And this 18-year-old kid said it just wasn't fair. He picked up his telephone and he called the head of the New York State Athletic Commission, who talked to him. And he called Ring Magazine. The editor-in-chief got on the phone with him. And in both cases, this kid said, what you've done to him is unconstitutional. And they said, come on, kid, it wasn't unconstitutional. What he did was unconstitutional. He had to step forward for military induction. He said he wasn't going to do it. He turned his back on America. He has to pay the price. Well, at that time, sportscaster Howard Cosell was out there yelling, what they've done to Muhammad Ali was totally unconstitutional. The Supreme Court of the United States of America will hear this and they will speak, because one day Muhammad Ali will get his license back again. It took 3.5 years and Cosell's words were prophetic. And the way I'm saying this is exactly the way I was telling the 1,000 people out there in Muhammad, and I noticed that everybody, you could hear the proverbial pin drop. And I said, well, that 18-year-old kid now stands in front of you as the boxing commissioner in New York, the same organization that pulled your license, that made you unemployed. That same 18-year-old kid stands before you as the former editor-in-chief of Ring Magazine, which wrote nothing but negative stories about you and took you out of the ratings. I cannot undo what was done to you back in 1967 by either Ring Magazine or by the New York State Athletic Commission. But I will tell you that as the head of the New York State Athletic Commission and as the former editor-in-chief of Ring Magazine, Muhammad, if that same event happened today and I was in either position, I not only would not take you out of the ratings, I not only would not strip you of your license, I would put you on a pedestal for standing up for your beliefs. You are indeed everything that you say you are. You are the greatest of all time. You have shown us how to live our lives in truth and what you believe in. 1,000 people erupted in cheers, standing, giving me a standing ovation. Ali stood, took my hands, raised them up in the air, gives me a kiss on the cheek and said, "I love you, man. You're in my life forever." And yes, from that moment, Ali and I were closer than ever.
Well, Randy, I know this is hard to believe, but we've actually come to the end of our two-part series.
No, we haven't.
Absolutely, man.
Well, so, how about another hour?
Well, another time. We're going to reschedule you. I can't get enough. But I want to tell you something. I told you this before we did this interview. This is something I'm going to say, and hopefully my kids are going to listen to. But this was a quote out of your book, and I think it sums up your life. "My big, beautiful family, which includes my wife and best friend Ronnie, along with my 5 children and 12 grandchildren, fulfill me. Life is about choices. Good ones and bad ones, right ones and wrong ones. Hopefully our good choices and right choices outweigh the bad and wrong ones by far. Bad and wrong choices can forever change a life. I wanted a headset on and a microphone in my hands. I wanted more than a ringside ticket rather than one that read working press or media. I needed to be close to my love. I needed to be as close to the center of the boxing universe as I could get. Randy, take it from an objective observer. You've done all the above and much more. You've led an honorable and personally successful life. All our best, and thanks so much for sharing with us your very moving story. I want to thank today's guest, Randy Gordon, for sharing his insights into the world of boxing across a multitude of real-life experiences. We encourage our listeners who have greater interest in the show or previous shows to visit our website, www.oneononestories.com, or email me via info@oneononestories.com with any comments, feedback, future show suggestions, and or recommended guests and topics. Again, Randy, the commish, our sincere thanks for sharing your time, expertise, and personal story. It's been a pleasure.
Doc, it has been more than a pleasure for me. It has been an absolute honor. Thank you so much.
This concludes part 2 of our 2-part series.